This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Hour number two here, WEEI Afternoons. Nice to have you with us here today. Christian Arcan, Andy Hart taking you all the way up until just after 6 o'clock. It was Kendrick Perkins. I forgot that Perk and the Celtics had this like thing going on.
Yeah. Stoney Greenberg or whatever.
Especially with Scooby Greenberg, who he does not care for. But yeah, he was not allowed. They didn't want him on the floats, which, by the way, good for him for not wanting to be on the float. You're a national broadcaster. You're not the local guy. Like, you shouldn't be on the float with the team. I get that. I thought that was all fine. But now it seems like there's some hard feelings, you know? he's been firing shots at those guys. They win the championship. They've been, you know, shaking their ass in everybody's face all summer long, basically, until the Olympics started, and then, you know, that happened. But, like, as far as guys like Perkins are concerned, and people like me and us and everybody else who doubted them, and we had reason to doubt them for years and years, but anyone who doubted them now is getting the treatment, and Perkins is fighting back. But I don't agree with what he said there. No one's afraid of the Celtics? Everybody's afraid of the Celtics.
Right.
Who's not afraid of the Celtics? Name me one team that's really not afraid of them. The teams he named all made moves to try and compete with the Celtics because they're afraid of them. The 76ers signed Paul George because they're afraid of the Celtics. The Knicks got Mikal Bridges because they're afraid of the Celtics. That's why that all happened.
They got two-way wings to compete with Tatum and Brown.
That's exactly what they did.
Now, I think some of this old school, like, oh, they're not a physical basketball team? Is it some of that?
There may be.
And
but
it's
even
like,
that, I mean, it's
they
like,
play a soft brand of basketball. I also think he's just steering into it on two levels. You're right. He's a critic who was banned from the parade. Well, if you're going to do that, I might as well just steer into the criticism. I also think being a contrarian in Celtics coverage right now is probably a smart place to be. It's probably going to get you played on the radio and played on TV because most people think the Celtics are the favorite to win the title, that they're loaded, that they're motivated, that in some weird way everything worked out perfectly for them to come back and not be complacent and not fall victim to human nature, right? So might as well steer into being the hater because the hater is going to get me attention and probably make me some money over
the
course.
Yeah, I mean, probably, and I think that's
I don't get to ride on a duck boat.
Right.
Who gives a duck?
Honestly, like I don't think that he should be angling for that either. I'm glad that he's not. I think that looks really weird when ex-players start openly standing for their old teams like that. I thought Brewski did a good job of that. I mean, he always had like a Patriots slant, but he wouldn't openly root for him and things like that. You know, like I don't like that. I think when guys do that, it looks lame. So fine. But what he's talking about now, like, does he hate the Celtics now? Like, it sounds like he kind of hates him a little bit.
Is that okay?
Know.
I would. Again, steer into it. If they want to be dinks and treat me a certain way, I'll treat them a certain way. If we're at war, we're at war, damn it.
Yeah, but his job is to be an objective commentator.
Nobody's
right?
objective. Can we just get that out of the way? Nobody's objective
right,
about anything.
Rooting for the Celtics and ripping on the Celtics are sort of even when it comes to that type of thing, right? Like, if I don't like him openly rooting for the Celtics, then I shouldn't like him openly ripping the Celtics either, right? If he's going out of his way to do it.
So you don't watch NBC Sports Boston.
I watch NBC Sports Boston.
Because they just openly root for the Celtics.
I mean, I feel like any national...
NBC Sports Boston is a local show. I mean,
no,
that's,
I know, but
different.
Most people just openly root for the Celtics now, or the team they cover in general. That's modern sports
Right, but
media.
He doesn't cover the Celtics. He covers the NBA.
But that's part of his coverage. That's what I'm saying.
NBA, inside the NBA, TNT, like, Shaq rooted for the Lakers, Barkley rooted for the Suns. Like, they all rooted for their
Barkley
teams.
Barkley root for the Suns? I don't remember him rooting for the Suns.
He would always say his
Barkley
Suns.
Ripping the Suns. And that's the thing. Like, if you're ripping everybody, fine.
What about McCourty and Rodney Harrison, like, openly saying, yeah, the Chiefs are not going to three-peat. I don't want to, like.
I thought that looked lame.
Okay.
They looked lame doing
consistent.
That. Yes,
it's
that
everywhere.
Was very lame, I thought.
It's everywhere. You don't get objective coverage almost anywhere, except on the afternoon show on WEEI.
Except for right here, right
two
here
to
in
six.
These two chairs. Lakers until
host one and two kick ass.
A little bit after six today, but yes, 617-779-7937. There's your phone number. This isn't really a referendum here on Kendrick Perkins and his career and broadcasting or anything like that. It's more about what the content of what he's getting at here, which is the Celtics had an easy path to the finals, which is a long narrative that I think a lot of people have heard and understood at this point, but
it's true.
Your path is what it is. I mean, it would have been harder if the other teams beat these teams, or if they stayed healthy or whatever, and they didn't. So what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to play other teams than the ones that are in front of you? I think the question now is, what's going to separate these Celtics from the other six teams that won championships the last 6 years, or the last 5 years, five different teams, they're the six now. But like that's I think, the bigger question, not who's scared of the Celtics. Everybody's scared of the Celtics. They should be terrified of the Celtics. The Celtics ran roughshod over the whole league last year, and that includes the good teams, you know, like they had this easy path to the finals. Like they didn't beat all these good teams all year either. So that to me sort of speaks more to what's gonna stand out more about this team. What's gonna differentiate them from the Nuggets and the Raptors and the Lakers and these the Bucks, these other teams that all won one-off championships here over the last 6 years now.
Well, I think what the lack of change, the continuity of the team. That is what this team is going to be talked about. If they fail, it may be, because Brad Stevens even acknowledged this yesterday, something about, like, in an ideal world, do you probably have a couple changes to mix it up, spice it up? That was a very Belichickian thing. Those days where they would bring in the hungry vet, the Corey Dillon or the junior Seau, like, he thought there was value in new ring chasers, not just having the same core team, which the core team was pretty good, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But adding that little like chasing mix, and this team is chasing ring two. They're not chasing ring one, right? They're all ring holders. And if they fail, I think that might fall under some criticism. Like it was just run it back out there. Mm-hmm. We'll do it again. Now, if they succeed, I actually think it's the same answer. You were really freaking good and deep and versatile and diverse. Why would you not just run it back out there again? I actually think the answer for success and failure could be the same in the eyes of some. But also, they're in the prime of their careers. Like their two stars are absolutely in the prime of their careers.
Yep.
In Brown and Tatum. And
absolutely,
that's a huge factor. And the complementary pieces are not new. So there's no fitting in, getting, you know, figuring it out, new chemistry year to year. Now, again, that could be bad. I don't know. But I think that's the strength. They're so well built for last year. It's why some people, as we talked about yesterday, thought they were built for a dynasty before they won one.
Absolutely. The only cautionary tale, and it's a recent one, the most cautionary tale I can think of for these Celtics are the 2018 Red Sox, because that was the best Red Sox team ever.
Yep.
And they kept everyone, almost the whole team, they kept intact. That was a very, I mean, they had all these young players coming back, guys in their prime, Mookie in his prime. Devers was just starting to emerge. You had Xander Bogaerts in his mid-20s and Christian Vasquez and, you know, J.D. Martinez was just entering his, like, 30s, I want to say. Either way, that was a team that looked loaded for bear. I mean, they looked like they were ready to go on a dynastic type of run. And in 2019, it was just, hey, bring it back, run it back, do the same thing we did last year, and we'll be fine. And in 2019, it was not fine. You know, it was very, very much not fine, so much so that they ended up firing Dombrowski the next season. So, like, that to me is a cautionary tale when you're just so proud of yourself and you're just patting yourself on the back all offseason and bringing back everybody and not really doing much else. You know, that can lead to complacency. To that, I would say that's why the Olympic thing is so important, right? Because that kind of blew up the whole idea of this team, or the most important players on this team anyway, getting too complacent. Now they have a whole new thing to be motivated for.
They definitely have that. If it strikes the right nerve, if it strikes, and Tatum talked about that Mazzulla was happy, at least in his sense,
right,
not winning the finals MVP, the Olympic thing, maybe motivating his star to take it to the next level. Hell, if he's a human being, the contract. Contracts affect people. Even if you think you are worthy of it, proving you're worthy of the contract. I also think the general dynamic of this team, maybe I'm being a green teamer, maybe I should go over to NBC Sports Boston. I think the chemistry of this team is phenomenal. I think it's phenomenal. And I think part of that is Porzingis. I think he brought a very unique aspect of chemistry. I think Drew Holiday was brought in to bring a more serious leadership chemistry aspect.
I think losing Smart and bringing in Holiday was the biggest chemistry upgrade you got.
But then
I
even
think by far.
Even more than that is, you know, these discussions Jalen talked about yesterday where we have certain games where we know it's going to be a Hauser game. We're going to get him 10 threes. We're going to run the offense through him and let him shoot his 10 threes. Like, that aspect of they're so good, that's almost like a Larry Bird left-hand game or a Larry Bird, I'm going to get Mikhail involved tonight so he doesn't get too pissy. We need to be the big three. They have a little bit of that aspect of not just proving their inflating their numbers of building the team for the long haul. And even Cornette, hearing him talk about yesterday, what were they called? The Bus One Boys. And like
right,
they have the name for these groups. And you can't name it yet, though. It'll come. It'll come naturally at some point. I just think they have a tremendous chemistry. And I think when you marry talent with chemistry, why would I bet against you?
Yeah, no, it's fair. I think that winning certainly helps with the chemistry, but here's Jaylen Brown on that exact thing as he was asked about that yesterday at Media Day.
Finding different ways to lead also sometimes means that sacrifice where, you know, on a night we plan, don't mean to disrespect them, but the Detroit Pistons, who have struggled over the last year or two, you know, we're going to play through Peyton, let him go for 30. And play through Sam, let him shoot 10 threes tonight. We're going to still win the game. You know, it don't have to be the normal way, but that gives those guys confidence. It gives those guys ability to run free, and we're going to need that down the line.
So
there's a certain arrogance.
Nice shot at the Pistons right there, I'd say.
But in general, like, we're just going to pick a game where we're going to have that guy score 30 on you.
I don't like that.
You don't care for it.
No, I don't like that he's talking that way. I don't like that that's their overall idea. It's like, yeah, we can beat these guys any way we want to. We'll get Pritchard out there scoring 30 points. Like, okay.
But if you do it,
what are you,
it's
the Harlem Globetrotters? Like, come on. Like, it's you lost to the Pistons recently, by the way.
They went into overtime with them the day before
past
Christmas.
Year, and the year before that, they lost to them twice, I want to say, in the season. So it's like, I know he didn't mean just the Pistons. He's talking about teams that are below them and clearly, you know, that they're better than. But I don't know. I mean, you're running it all back, and you're probably going to be good, and you're probably going to be heading shoulders better than a lot of teams out there. But I think that does breed some complacency. I do. Even with the perceived slights in the Olympics and everything else, I think that you can just, you know, love the smell of your own farts so much that you start to forget that they stink and that, you know, other people are not really that into being around you when you're ripping ass like that. You know what I mean? Like, that's sort of what it seems like to me right now.
I don't know. It's arrogant. There's a air of arrogance to it. I don't think there's any...
You know, like my fart analogy?
Yeah, I'm going to go the air in a different direction. There's an air of arrogance, not that aroma. Mm-hmm. Although, I am one of those people. My family makes fun of me for that.
Why, you're a farter?
And I enjoy the smell of them.
I mean, everybody likes their own brand.
No, people tell me that I'm weird for liking it, that I think they're sweet and say whatever, and I enjoy them.
All right, well, graphic now, but I think that everybody does enjoy their own farts when someone else farts.
Yeah, that's true.
That it becomes a problem.
I definitely enjoy it. Anyway... I think it's actually a good thing. I would spin it as a good thing because you're giving those guys opportunities, keeping them very much in the mix. They are not, but you know, they're going to get their shots, their bites at the apple. And then, oh, by the way, when you need to maybe lean on them in a bigger game, not against the Pistons, against a real team, Jaylen Brown, you might be surprised, right? They might be more ready. So I actually think you can spin that as a good thing. Now, there's an arrogance to this team. And that is a concern as well. I would add that to our list of questions yesterday.
Sure.
Are they getting arrogant? Are they erring on the side of arrogant now? I think the Jason Tatum All-Star MVP trophy tattoos, the tattoos are starting to annoy me a little bit with him. Him saying, when you're as accomplished as I am, starting to annoy me a little bit.
Haven't seen the best of me yet. I mean, I understand the point of that, but he's been like that. I mean, he's always been like that.
And that's kind of why I don't like him.
Yeah. I mean,
he rubs me the wrong way with those comments.
Jaylen Brown's pretty arrogant too.
Absolutely is. Yeah. And we'll get into it later with Do You Care? We got like battling sneaker wars and the marquee shoes, and they the Parcells don't have a diva quarterback. I think you have two diva stars right now. And that's the NBA, and every team has diva stars, and whatever team wins this year will probably have diva stars, right?
Yeah.
Ant Edwards is a diva,
and a bunch of teams that don't win are going to have diva stars,
right?
Too,
yeah. You know, so maybe that's just the world, but you absolutely have a couple diva stars that are enjoying their lot in NBA life right now, know they're good, tell you they're good, aren't afraid to acknowledge they're good.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's just the NBA world, but they're divas.
They are, and they're surrounded by a team, I think, that can certainly prop that up, even if it becomes problematic, which
it hasn't. But who tells them to STFU?
Missoula.
I would say Drew Holiday.
Or Drew Holiday.
Okay. I was thinking both of those,
yeah,
and I don't know the answer.
I think both of them. But it's not like Tatum's out there mouthing off all the time either. He complains to the refs.
No, but there's...
Joe Mazzulla complains on Brown and Tatum's behalf and all those post-game press conferences. They don't get the respect they deserve, all that. I think it's more probably Holiday and even Horford to some extent than Mazzulla.
Maybe. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. Quick break. When we come back, Jason Tatum, we're referencing all these quotes. We'll play them for you, as well as what Jaylen Brown had to say yesterday. We'll go through Media Day and your phone calls right after Brian tells.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I. .com.
Do what's trending.
It's Jason Tatum yesterday.
As accomplished as he is.
As accomplished as he is. And he is accomplished. I mean, listen, All-NBA three times now. Two gold medals. NBA champion.
They don't give those All-Star MVPs to just anyone.
It's All-Star true. MVP, that's true.
You got to remember those. You get those tattooed on your skin. That's forever.
Only one guy gets to be the All-Star Game MVP each year. That's true.
It's usually calculated. They usually like get together as players beforehand and decide who's going to get it.
That's true. Jason Tatum is saying, you haven't seen the best of me, that I'm going to continue to get better. You look at his numbers last year, and I don't know that they necessarily got better from the year before, but it was a different team, and he was asked to do different things. I guess the question is, do you think Jason Tatum's going to continue to get better, or has he maybe plateaued a little bit in terms of what this team is asking of him and what he's able to do in the confines of this offense? Not that it's a confining offense, a weird way of putting it, but like you have to share the ball now more than you did before.
This is probably going to stun people. I do think he's going to get better. I think he's going to naturally mature. I think he's a really heady, caring basketball player that is maturing. And maybe caring a little bit less. I think he'd still like to win an MVP. I do think that probably bothered him that he wasn't the MVP of the finals.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think he'd like to win an MVP for a season for the league as the best player on the best team. That whole argument when he had his little run at one point last year. But I do think he's maturing a little bit. I do kind of like where it's going. He's not perfect by any means. I'm not sure he's ever going to be a true dirt dog or dive on the floor and try hard, any of that crap. But I think he's more than good enough at the way he is, the way his personality is. And don't you, I mean, this is kind of back to Drake May and Daniel, like experience matters.
Yeah.
Like if you believe experience matters, then experience at the highest level matters and it will help you. So I absolutely think he has room to get. That doesn't mean 35 points a game. That means you watch it and say, he's a better all-around basketball player. He's doing things situationally that are better for the team. Now, I would like him to get the damn mechanics on his shooting fixed.
Yes, which it looks like he's doing. He's got a
Terp. You see Terp's thing? Like,
thing
oh,
going on there, yeah.
He's nailing all these threes. Okay, good. Now, can you do it in games?
He's got the hitch. Got the hitch out of his shot there,
like,
yeah.
Do you? I don't know how I feel about that. That this
about
idea,
what?
That, like, now it's mechanical. Now it's like, is it really?
Would you rather it was like in his head?
Maybe. I don't know. Because I feel like if it's in your head, then you're just one slump buster away from it kind of being gone. Is it really mechanical, or are you looking for a reason to blame the slump on? You know what I mean? Like, Philip Rivers, if he went through a hellacious slump, somebody might say, you kind of throw funny. Maybe you want to throw. But it worked for him, so he never fixed his mechanics.
Sean Marion had the ugliest jump shot in the history of the NBA.
But it's how you shoot. Yeah. You know,
and Tatum
Al Horford, when he does his little set
either,
shot, like, I feel like you might be looking for a reason. Is the reason really there, or did you always shoot that way, and now you're missing him, and what is the reason?
Sometimes
it's weird.
Sometimes guys put on, you know, muscle. By the way, did you see Jaylen Brown yesterday?
Jacked up.
He looked like Mr. T walking out there.
Is that
like,
good?
He's huge. I don't know. I mean, listen, in terms of like getting rebounds and stuff like that, or posting guys up, like, yeah, maybe. But
yeah.
he looks like he ate Jaylen Brown and then started going on like a crazy
when you put a mask on and go underwater and lift weights, and like there was a lot going on there.
Yeah.
He's also maturing.
He's
settling into his man body.
He's huge now.
But I do wonder, for a guy who's supposed to be one of the most athletic players in the league and can elevate and explode, I don't know what he's put on. We should probably ask Terp. Like, has he acknowledged a gain of weight, or is it just a Vince Wilfork like redistribution and he's a little muscular? Do you want him more?
Look like Tony Atlas. I don't know if I consider that a redistribution. He's gotten bigger. I mean,
yeah, I'm not sure I like it. Like, part of me, the hardo in me, is like, yeah, he's jacked. That's awesome.
Right.
Is it going to make him a better basketball player? I don't know about that.
Well, the reason why I even bring that up at all is sometimes that can throw your shot off, right? I mean,
yes.
All of a sudden now the ball doesn't weigh as much.
My thighs have gotten so big, I don't shoot like I used to.
Exactly. Like, I'm so ripped now that, like, the ball just flies out of my hands. Like, what am I supposed to do? But, yeah, that can happen.
And that can happen to Tatum.
Yeah.
There was a big talk about it, and he definitely was a little
bit. He got bigger, yeah.
Like, wider V'd shoulder. Maybe that was part of it, and maybe that is the real mechanics. But I really need to see him. This is a stupid me. This is a stupid Andy type thing. I need opening night. There's lots of them. There's lots of stupid Andy things. I agree with you, Twitch. Go have fun with it. I'll respond as Chris Curtis. Don't worry. I just want to see him go out opening night, like first quarter, and go 6-for-6 shooting and just go, okay, we're good now. Let's roll to a title. Because I do. I have this little... The fact that he's there early
is good. There's a possibility he's going to be bad at shooting. Like, he's not going to shoot well for the rest of the year. Like,
yeah,
all year
I do.
He's going to
And he thinks
poorly.
So, too. That's why he's there at 6 a.m. with a guy fixing his mechanics.
I don't think that he thinks it's going to be a problem all year. He wants to start the year off well because he ended the last year poorly. I don't think anybody believes this is going to be something that dogs him for the whole year, the rest of his career or something.
So the flip side of this, though, isn't the famous story that Tiger Woods won the Masters and then totally redid his swing?
Yeah, but that's golfers do that all the time.
Yeah, I know. But if you're Tiger Woods and you're by far, like, people are taking the field and not really taking the field, they're taking you. You're at the height of your game. That should ease my concerns about this. So you have no concerns that he has a mechanical issue in his shooting. That doesn't bother you at all.
I don't think it's great, but it's not something that I think is going to be a huge problem this year for him. No.
Okay.
Because he had a good year shooting for the most part during the season and tailed off at the end, and then had a poor Olympics in the offseason, which doesn't count. And once the season starts, if he gets off to a really bad start,
count?
Sure. Because it's the Olympics. Who cares?
Him, I think. He knows he's missing the shots.
I don't give a rat's ass about what he does in the Olympics. I don't care. As
but
a
he
Celtics
does.
Fan, I don't care. I don't care. I'm saying.
No. If it's in his head, if this is yippee,
right.
That's in his head. He sees those missed shots. He's like, damn, even in more laid-back environments, I can't hit shots.
Fine, but if he's out playing the pickup games at Venice Beach, like, I don't care if he has bad game. Like, that's all the same to me. If he's not playing for the Celtics, it doesn't make
Beach
a difference.
Is the Olympics.
Whatever. It's the same thing. It's basically, if you're not winning games for the Celtics, if you're in the Olympics or you're just, running, playing game, whatever, and you're not, your shot's off or something, that doesn't matter to me. And also, the way that his minutes got distributed, I thought was ridiculous and that whole thing, and that's a whole other topic. But either way, I don't think it's going to be some big problem this year. No, I don't. I don't think so. Jason Tatum's been in the league a long time. I don't think he's suddenly going to forget how to shoot the basketball. I just think that's not plausible.
I would generally agree. I just want to see with mine own two eyes in, like, the first game or two,
yep.
Him get hot shooting so we can just put it to bed and idiots like me on the radio can't talk about it.
Okay. From your lips to God's ears. 617-779-7937.
The yips where, I don't know, it's a golf thing where you can't, or a baseball thing, you can't make an easy throw.
That was not a great explanation of the yips, but that is how I explained it to
Matt
Jones when I asked him about if he had the yips. And if Jason Tatum, if you want to call in and tell us if you think you may have the yips. If you or someone you know has the yips, call us at 617-779-7937.
Or it could be, what was the other thing? Premature launch or something?
Target launch or something. What was it called?
Failure to launch.
I forget what it was. I'll look it up. Anyway, Jim is in New Hampshire. He has some thoughts on what Perk had to say. Go ahead, Jim.
Hey guys, I just want to know. I don't understand the Perkins negativity towards the Celtics. I mean, he played for them. I've been going to games. I was my first game with Larry Bird was a rookie, so giving away my age there.
Okay,
and with my dad, and it's just so I'm a diehard Celtics fan, and I think they did great last year. But it's like people seem to want to pick him apart right now. I mean, even you guys try to find some negativity in it.
Well, I mean, we could just sit here and talk about how great they are, Jim, if that's what you want to hear. The Celtics are awesome, right? Aren't they awesome? They're just going to beat everybody and win another championship.
Remember when
they beat
the Mavs? That was awesome.
They beat Dallas, and that was awesome. Like, yeah, let's not have any sort of critical thoughts at all about the Celtics or what may happen this year or the way it's all going to work and just bringing everybody back again and resting on your laurels, which is really the only – if you even want to call that a negative, which I'm not necessarily sure it even is yet, that's basically my biggest problem, is that they're going to rest on their laurels this year. And their laurels are pretty good to rest on. But it's like, you know, you have to, other teams are going to try and have a big target on your back. You've earned it, by the way. It's not like you just have it for no reason, but I mean, this is what happens. This is why it's hard to repeat now. This is why there's been six different champions in the last 6 years. It's because there's parity in the league, and teams go out there and adjust to the best teams. You're the best team.
And that's why we talk about it, because history tells us, if you believe history matters, they're not going to win the title, because the recent history says you don't repeat in the NBA.
Right.
So, therefore, some reason is going to prevent them from winning the title. It may just be the path. Maybe other teams are better. Maybe Denver gets back, and that's a bad matchup, and Denver just beats you. Right? Remember when we all had that circled, and then it just kind of dissipated, but it was supposed to be Celtics Nuggets.
Jason Tatum had that circled.
Tatum said that we thought we'd win as soon as the Nuggets got knocked out.
And he was right. Because remember, the talk was, they emphasized this. I remember Scal going over the top, non-Joker minutes or whatever, like, you got to win those.
Yeah.
Well, they did win those, but then he would kill them. I forgot what it was doing during the regular season, a couple matchups.
Denver beat them both times.
Yeah. But that's what everybody was focused on. Like, those were previews of the finals and how they play and how they match up and what they're going to do.
Well, they are a bad matchup. They slow the game down so much, and the Celtics want to go. Right. So, like, they keep the score low. They slow it down, play a half-court style offense. It's not good for the Celtics, but the Nuggets got worse. They lost Bruce Brown 2 years ago. They lost Kentavious Caldwell-Pope this year. They're bringing in an old Russell Westbrook, who it's not really going to fit with Aaron Gordon and Nikola
Jokic.
I don't
really get that.
I think it's supposed to be supplement the non-Jokic minutes. Like, he's supposed to be their Jokic when Jokic isn't on the floor, is my guess, because they can't really play together.
In his prime, he was kind of like a small Jokic.
Exactly.
Sort of what he was. You know, he averaged a triple-double. Like, he was kind of like Jokic, only 6'4", or whatever he is.
And without the winning.
That, too. Steve is in the car. Go ahead, Steve.
Gentlemen, how are you?
Hey, Steve.
Good. So question, you know, most professional sports teams have a captain. I'm kind of wondering what your take is on why the Celtics don't have a captain. The last captain for the Celtics was Rondo in 2014. And for some reason, you know, the Bruins have Marchand, the Patriots have their five captains. Why don't the Celtics have a captain? And I'm not saying it should be the Jays, but maybe, as you guys alluded to, someone like Jrue Holiday or someone like Al Horford, who has been with the team for a long time, who can keep the Divas in line. Do you have any sort of thoughts on that? I look forward to hearing what you have to say.
Good question, Steve. They don't have a captain. You're right. I'd say
it was Marcus Smart. That was part of the whole Marcus Smart
thing.
Smart
was like, that was his thing. I'd say the captain of the team right now is Jaylen Brown. Honestly, like, I'd say that's probably your captain. He's not a veteran like Holiday or like Al Horford, who I think would both be good and capable captains on this team. I think Tatum could be a good captain on the team, obviously. But who's the captain right now? Who sort of sees that position? I'd say it's Jaylen Brown.
The Celtics also haven't named a captain since 2014.
Right. And I think that was the weirdness of best players, too young. Then we have Marcus Smart filling the void.
Right.
I disagree. You said, I agree with your part about Jaylen Brown. Mm-hmm. I think he's kind of the captain of the team. I think he kind of showed that last year in his evolution of leadership and everything he did, the mic'd up segments, hearing the insight, all of that. Jason Tatum would be a good captain. You sure about that?
Yeah, he's the best player.
But that doesn't always work that way.
I think
just because you're the best player doesn't mean you're a good captain.
Fine, but what's a good captain? I mean, like, really, if we're talking about a leader, sure, Jason Tatum's the best player. He leads by example. You know, like, if you're the best player,
should he be bitching
team
to the ref every missed call?
I mean, should LeBron be a leader?
No. Don't deflect. Let's talk about Jason Tatum and good leadership.
I don't think it matters. That's
people
why
think
I brought
LeBron,
up LeBron
is a boob. Like, ask Rich.
They
Keefe
think he's
about
a
LeBron.
Good leader, though. I mean,
why
LeBron
is he a good leader?
Because
he's
the
won
best
four titles.
And he's won a bunch of championships.
So that makes you a leader? Just winning?
Being the best player on a team that won four titles?
Being the best player
that went to
best
eight straight finals.
Did he win because of his leadership or his talent?
I think LeBron's a decent leader.
I'm not sure about that.
He dragged that 2018. Who's the second best player on that 2018 Cavs team?
Again, you're misconstruing talent and leadership.
Did he not lead that 2018 Cavs team?
Is Jawan Bentley the most talented player on the Patriots?
No, but he's not their only leader.
Is he the top five? No, he isn't, but he's a great leader.
He also hasn't led them to anything. LeBron led his team to eight straight finals.
Wait, so only Super Bowl champions and NBA champions have good leaders? Everybody else has bad leaders?
Of course not, but to say
that's
LeBron's a bad
argument
leader when he led a team full of stiffs,
but I'm not sure
to the
he's
finals
a great leader.
Who's a great leader in the NBA then?
Kevin Garnett.
In the league right now.
Yeah, right now.
Right now, good leader, good leader.
Bill Russell.
No, I'm trying to think who I would anoint.
Wilt the Stilt.
A good, what do we think about Butler and what he turned into Miami?
I consider Jimmy Butler.
He's a good leader.
Because early in his career, I don't think he was.
He's also the best player on that team and the most talented player on that team. So,
but I think he evolved into a good leader. I think he kind of pulls that team together.
I think LeBron James is a better leader than Jimmy Butler.
Better player.
Better leader and player.
Well, he's definitely a better player.
Right.
The leadership thing is debatable. Because I think LeBron James is about LeBron James. And if you're about yourself, you're not a great leader. If it's all about you, you're not a great leader.
Jaylen Brown's not about himself?
We're having a debate as to who the great leaders of the Celtics are.
We just said Jaylen Brown's the leader. So, but he's about himself, too.
And I don't think he's about himself.
Absolutely he's about himself.
You think he's about himself? So you think he didn't play for the team last year? He didn't do everything he could to pull that team together?
I think he did it just as much as Jason Tatum did or anybody else on the team. It was a team effort. I think that all went down. LeBron does the same thing.
Telling me how he doesn't care about his points or shooting and then shoots more than anybody, that's weird. That's not leadership.
What does that have to do with anything?
That's weird.
He also led the team in assists.
He likes to tell you how good he is.
Would you rather have George Hill shooting more than LeBron? I mean, I don't. What's your point? Like, don't you want your best player shooting the most?
Sure, but don't tell me you didn't shoot. Don't tell me you didn't care about your points. If you didn't care about your points, you wouldn't shoot more than anybody on the court. That also includes Luka. You shot more than anybody because you care about your points.
Yeah, but he also led the team in assist, Andy.
I understand that.
Do you, though? Because you're all just talking about him like all he does is shoot.
No, but he needed to get his points. He cares about his points. He sees games where there's an opportunity to put up fraudulent stats in the fourth quarter. If you don't see that, then you haven't watched that guy play.
Fine.
And I like him as a player.
Okay. He's one of the best players in the league. He's first team All-NBA.
Absolutely.
Right.
Because if you're a good player.
You don't do that just from fraudulent stats.
So you're of the school that if you're a good player, you're automatically a good leader. So Stephon Diggs is a great leader.
Not necessarily.
Okay, because he's a great wide receiver. He's been a great wide receiver in the NFL.
Has Jason Tatum been a cancer on the team like Stephon Diggs or like Antonio Brown? Now you're being ridiculous.
Exactly.
Now you're comparing him to Antonio Brown.
Talent and leadership.
That's ridiculous.
Talent and leadership are not directly connected.
What does Jason Tatum have to do with Antonio Brown? He's nothing like Antonio Brown.
We're talking about leadership and looking for yourself and points and talent as compared.
Has Jason Tatum been a big cancer to the team? Has that been a big problem?
No, I would never argue that.
No,
so doesn't mean he's a great leader.
All right, but if you're not being a problem and you're the best player on the team.
So you just give the best player the captaincy.
Not every single time. No, not always. But I think that he would be a good leader on this team.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think he'd be a good captain for the team. I said Jaylen Brown.
I don't think they have a great candidate, and I think that's probably why they don't have a captain.
I think they have four good candidates, honestly. I think Brown's the guy, but they have four good candidates.
So Brown, Tatum, Horford,
and
Holiday?
Yeah. I think all four of those guys would be good captains.
Is there a short-term captaincy thing? And I don't know if anybody cares about this.
Do they just switch it every week?
No, but like Horford. He could be done at any time, right? I know he said he's not done, but do you want to make him the captain this year and then he retires and you're like, oh, now who's the captain? Like, because then you bring out the idea of a captain.
Mm. Like, I think they just stick with not having a captain.
That's how I look at it.
That seems like something Joe Mazzulla would be like, a captain's a sign of weakness or something, you know? Like that.
He would
say
something
like something weird like
that. But I also think the best
leadership. The only captain is the Lord.
Is organic.
Something like that.
The best leadership just comes together and you have leaders.
We
got to
take a break because we got Adam Schefter coming up here. 617-779-7937. Schefter joins us next. We're back here at WEEI Afternoons. Christian Arcand, Andy Harton joining us right now on the hotline from ESPN. The great Adam Schefter joins us here on the program. Adam, how you doing?
What is going on there, gentlemen? How are we doing today?
We're doing just great. Adam, we asked you last week what your dream job would be if you pulled a Woj and decided to just leave media. And I know you've been agonizing it over that all week, so we'll get to that in just a minute. But what I want to ask you about is a segment we've been doing called Bill Watch, and that is looking around the league at teams that maybe have their coach on the hot seat and that Bill Belichick may be looking at, another media guy now. And I was wondering who you think is at the top of the list of the Bill Watch list, because we have our theories. Who has the hottest seat in the NFL right now for head coaches?
Well, I think Bill obviously is going to be a little choosy in the sense that he's not going to go to a bad team. So it's going to be a highly competitive team. And I just think you just look at the NFC East. And to me, inevitably, somebody's going to fall short in that division. I don't know whether that's the Giants or the Cowboys or the Eagles or a combination. And to me, those are the first places you look in that division, in the NFC East. Now, could there be another team that emerges? Absolutely. But, again, those are three historic franchises. Those are three teams with winning traditions. Those are three teams that in some small way, there's some sort of connection to. Obviously, closer to the Giants. Obviously, he knows Eagles people. He knows Cowboys people. Has people who's worked for the Eagles that he knows. People who work for the Cowboys he knows. I think you should look at that division and say, okay, that's the division I'm watching.
Is there any chance that that could happen this year? I know like a half a century ago, Don Coryell joined the Chargers, I think, in like week four. Any chance that Bill Belichick could take over a team this season?
Well, I don't see a team making a change in season. I don't see Bill jumping in the middle without being able to implement his program. So I don't see that happening. Now, the great part about the NFL is that there are a lot of things you don't see happening, and then they happen. So you never know, and I would never rule out anything. But it's not something I'm looking to have happen this year in my mind.
Adam, the Celtics, how about the Patriots are taking on the San Francisco 49ers this weekend? Yeah. It's 2-1-2 teams, a Niners team that's had two straight losses here and a tough one to the Rams. Patriots are big-time underdogs in this game, and the Niners are pretty banged up. Is there any world you can think of where this game isn't the blowout that people are expecting it to be?
Yo, I definitely could see it not being a blowout. First of all, I think the Niners are reeling some. They're not the same team. They're not getting the same pass rush. They're injured on offense. They're injured on defense. And I think they're a shaken team right now. And I think that, you know, I would be a little surprised and certainly disappointed if New England came out and played two bad games in a row, especially when they have 11 days to get ready for that game. So, I don't know. I think the game's going to be a little closer than people think. That's me. Doesn't mean I'm right. I'm not a prognosticator for a living. But I think New England's going to come out and be a little bit spunkier. And I think San Francisco right now is reeling some. Now, watch. You know, now we get 38 to 10 or something. But, you know, that's how I see it. You know, I think it'll be a little bit – I don't have no idea what the point spread is in the game, but I think – I don't think it's going to be a blowout. I don't.
Adam, we have seen some suspect offense through 3 weeks of football. We've seen quarterbacks benched, pulled from games, touchdowns, numbers are down. At a league level, we know they like offense. We know the owners like offense and entertaining football. Is there any concern about the level of offense in the quarterback play right now?
Well, the numbers are down across the board, and I think people have tried to figure out why that is. And I think probably the primary reason is that teams have essentially ignored the preseason, many teams, and they've treated the start of the season, not intentionally, but they've treated the start of the season as almost like it's the preseason. You know, and again, it's not that intentionally, but it does take a little time for some of these players and teams to work off the rust. It just doesn't happen by showing up in week one, not playing at all in the preseason, and think that your team and players are going to come out, hit the ground running. It doesn't happen like that, and hasn't. And we're seeing more young quarterbacks play sooner than ever before. And so you've got young quarterbacks. Like, in what universe did this become acceptable and prevalent to where Jaden Daniels goes out and plays two series in the first preseason game, and then they put him on ice for the rest of the preseason? And similar for Caleb Williams and Bo Nix. Like, you know, I remember the time being where rookie quarterbacks, you know, they use the preseason as a time to get these guys ready. And now they're putting him on ice, and they bring him out in the regular season. You can't expect that a guy's going to hit the ground running. It's just not practical.
On the subject of rookie quarterbacks, you just mentioned Bo Nix had a great week, a great game from Jaden Daniels two nights ago, and even Caleb Williams, he had a couple picks but had a big passing game. Watching these rookie quarterbacks sort of start to have some success here early in the year, do you think that should put pressure on the Patriots to get May out there?
It should have no bearing on their decision whatsoever, and I wouldn't expect it to have any bearing on their decision whatsoever. They're going to do what is best for their team and Drake May, no matter if Jaden Daniels wins Rookie of the Year, Most Valuable Player, Super Bowl MVP. It doesn't matter. You have to continue to stick with what you believe in as a team, and you know what's best for your quarterback and your organization. So, to me, what any other rookie quarterback is doing is irrelevant compared to what New England has planned for Drake May. when Drake May's ready, whether that's this week, next month, next season, whatever, it's time to go to him. And it doesn't matter that anybody else is having success. We've seen more and more. There are certain quarterbacks that sit out a full year. Jordan Love did that mm-hmm. in Green Bay more than a year. Patrick Mahomes did that. It's not the surefire scenario recipe to get somebody time-tested and to ensure that they'll succeed. But New England's not going to rush Drake May no matter how well any other rookie quarterback is playing. And by the way, you know, Caleb's still struggling, and Bo Nix has had struggles, and Jaden Daniels is coming off his best week so far. So it wasn't until this past weekend that any rookie quarterback had thrown a touchdown pass in the NFL, week three.
Adam, whether it's good or bad, what has surprised you the most? You know, there's undefeated teams that I think people didn't necessarily expect, or there's a winless team like Cincinnati or Jacksonville that people probably didn't expect. What surprised you the most?
Yeah, I guess I would say right now, the Minnesota Vikings. They're in a division with a Chicago Bear team that most people were expecting to be vastly improved, a Green Bay team that we saw run through the playoffs last year, and a Detroit team that could have represented the NFC team in the Super Bowl. The Vikings lose Kirk Cousins, lose their first-round draft pick, J.J. McCarthy, and here they are unbeaten at 3-0 with Sam Darnold playing as well as people thought he would when the Jets drafted him with the third overall pick out of USC.
All right, we'll leave it right there, Adam Schefter. Thanks so much for the time today. Always good to talk with you. We'll have to push that question about your dream sports job down to next week. But thanks so much.
Well, I was ready for you guys, but they're all the political ads running, you know, 4 minutes past the start of our spot.
I know. You can thank Kelly Ayotte and the New Hampshire primaries for that, unfortunately.
That's the way it goes. Yeah, I'm all angry about that. So we'll have to wait till next week.
All right, next week. Hold you to that. Thanks, Adam.
Thank you.
All right, that's a great Adam Schefter, ESPN, joining us here on WEEI Afternoon. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We'll get to your phone calls and continue with our Patriots conversation next.